I'm old enough to remember when this entire country was a First Amendment zone. And now I'm being told that in certain instances when I want to exercise my right of free speech, I have to go behind a chain link fence. I'm not going to do that. My good friend Jim Hightower wrote one time, or said one time, I forget which, there's only two things you're going to find in the middle of the road: a yellow line and dead armadillos. I also remember, or I think I remember, as you age, memory starts to play tricks on you, but I think I remember when the entire Democratic Party was the Progressive Party. I'm very grateful that there is a move referred to as the Progressive Caucus within the Democratic Party. I'm very grateful that that exists, and I hope at some point it will be, once again, the Democratic Party. Now, I have just a few remarks that I want to make, and then we're going to introduce the people that you really came here tonight to hear. We have reached, and this goes without saying, an extremely critical juncture in U.S. political history. For the first time, and I'll qualify this in a second, for the first time it has become absolutely necessary to remove from office an administration that is operating as a criminal enterprise. And in operating that way, it's an enterprise that sees itself as beyond the reach of both U.S. constitutional law and international law. In less than 6 years, the administration of George W. Bush has rendered meaningless the First, Fourth, Fifth, and Eighth Amendments to the U.S. Constitution, and assaults on other sections of the Bill of Rights are ongoing. The Bush administration has chosen this path by its insistence that the interpretation of the rule of law that has slowly evolved over the two centuries as the foundation upon which this country is governed is no longer operational. That the checks and balances insisted upon by the framers is out of date and an intolerable burden to the oncoming reality of corporatism or fascism, call it what you like, as opposed to democracy. Now, the Bush Doctrine says that the law should be decided unilaterally by the leader without the system of checks and balances that differentiate democracy from dictatorship. In fact, that sick idea is to be the foundation of the new American century and the method by which we shall be governed, according to Bush. Yeah. As Bush said last week, I am the decider. Perhaps in his mind that's true, but that's not the way we're going to be governed, not in this country, not ever. And it should be noted, and I think all of us in this room are aware of this, that other Republican administrations also have insisted that they could operate outside the Constitution. In fact, had an obligation to do so in their positions of leadership. The Nixon administration's actions domestically and in Southeast Asia is an example. The Reagan administration's actions domestically and in Central America is another example. The Bush 1 administration's actions domestically and in Central America is a further example. And now the most egregious and blatant assault on the rule of law in both the United States and the rest of the world by George W. Bush. This has got to stop. The latest and possibly the most frightening declaration by this administration, declared as always with that weird, sinister combination of juvenile coyness and deliberate obfuscation, is its right to use so-called tactical nuclear weapons. This takes the risk of allowing this administration to continue in office to an unacceptable level, period. Now, further adding to the urgency of removing Bush and his entire crew, and what makes this administration unique in its criminality, is the reality that he was never elected president to begin with. And because that is a fact, he could not have been reelected. His claim that the phony election in 2004 gave him, in his words, political capital, that he could now, in his words, spend, takes all of us directly into the murky madness that is the mind of George W. Bush, and you don't want to go there. We're here tonight to discuss both the necessity and the means of removing from office, legally and peacefully, the most corrupt and dangerous administration in our history, that of George W. Bush. Thank you. Thank you for indulging me that personal statement. I never get a chance to say anything. And that takes a lot of burden off. Whew! Now, before we can discuss, and I'm going to read from notes here that Joy was so kind to provide me with, because I thought you could only be impeached if you had... Oh, God, can I say this? If you had... Where's the diagrams? I thought you could only be impeached if you had... Oh, I can't do it. All right. Before we can discuss impeachment, we need to make sure we know a little about where it came from and what it is. A statement made by Edmund Randolph, governor of Virginia and delegate to the Constitutional Convention in 1787, reads as follows. Guilt, wherever found, ought to be punished. The executive will have great opportunities of abusing his power, particularly in time of war, when the military force will be in his hands. Should no regular punishment be provided, it will be irregularly inflicted by tumults and insurrection. Now, that's the end of the quote. And Edmund Randolph made that point to stress how important it was to have a means of legally and peacefully removing the chief executive officer and, if necessary, his entire staff. Now, contrary to popular belief, impeachment does not refer to the conviction of the president. I'm sure this group knows that. And his or her eviction from office. It's the process by which charges against the president and other federal officials are prosecuted by members of the House of Representatives. I seem to remember... Yeah, that's right. And it was all because of a... No, I can't do it. Oh, my God. It's the process by which the Judiciary Committee conducts an investigation into charges and then drafts articles of impeachment that get voted on by the House. If at least one article passes, then Bush is officially impeached. The Senate then conducts a trial, and if Bush is found guilty, he is removed from office. So the point, of course, is that calling for impeachment does not mean that the charges won't be investigated or that Bush would be removed from office without a chance to defend himself. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? Now it's the point where I want to introduce the people who are going to discuss this and, in a very real sense, as far as I'm concerned, educate me and educate all of us. I realize that this group is way more informed than the average voter or person in this country, but I think the people I'm about to introduce are going to add to that. Our first panel member is Elizabeth de la Vega. She is a former federal prosecutor with more than 20 years of experience as an assistant United States attorney in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and a member of the Organized Crime Strike Force and chief of the San Jose branch of the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of California. Ms. De La Vega has prosecuted federal criminals cases of every variety, including conspiracy to defraud the United States, heroin smuggling, investment fraud, violent takeover robbery, and money laundering. She has also briefed and argued numerous cases before the 8th and 9th Circuit Courts of Appeals. Ms. De La Vega retired from federal service in 2004. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you.
Congresswoman Maxine Waters. Considered by many to be one of the most powerful women in American politics today, Congresswoman Waters has gained a reputation as a fearless and outspoken advocate for women, children, people of color, and the poor. Congresswoman Waters represents a large part of South Central Los Angeles, the communities of Westchester and Playa del Rey, as well as the diverse cities of Gardena, Hawthorne, Englewood, and Lawndale. Formerly the chair of the 39-member Congressional Black Caucus from 1997 through 1998, Representative Waters has held the influential leadership position of Chief Deputy Whip of the Democratic Party since the 106th Congress and was named co-chair of the powerful House Democratic Steering Committee. She continues to be a member of the House Committee on Financial Services and the ranking member on the Subcommittee on Housing and Community Opportunity. She also serves on the Subcommittee on Financial Institutions and Consumer Credit and the Subcommittee on Domestic and International Monetary Policy, Trade, and Technology. She also continues to serve on the Committee on the Judiciary and its Subcommittee on Courts, the Internet, and Intellectual Property, also on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security, and on Immigration, Border Security, and Claims. And Jesus, I'm exhausted. When do you sleep? Our next panel member is Shayana Kadidal. Shayana Kadidal is a staff attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights in New York City. He's a graduate of Yale Law and a former law clerk, to Judge Kermit Lopez of the United States Court of Appeals for the First Circuit. He has worked on a number of significant cases in the wake of 9/11, including the center's challenge to the detention of prisoners at Guantanamo. And the center's amicus briefs in the cases of two citizens detained as so-called enemy combatants. Several cases on behalf of immigrants challenging the government's policy of closing their deportation hearings to their families, the press, and the public, and a case on behalf of a class of hundreds of aliens held in immigration detention long after their final deportation orders, solely in order to allow law enforcement to conduct criminal investigations without probable cause. He is also counsel in the center's pending challenge to the NSA's warrantless surveillance program, the Center for Constitutional Rights versus Bush. And finally, to round out this excellent panel, Assemblyman Paul Koretz. Welcome, Paul. Assemblyman Paul Koretz he's a Democrat from the West Hollywood District, was elected to represent the 42nd Assembly District on November 7, 2000, and was reelected in 2002. Paul has served as the chair of the Assembly Labor Committee since his freshman year, one of only a handful of legislators to chair a standing policy committee as a freshman. Paul also chairs the Assembly Select Committee on Gun Violence and the Assembly Select Committee on California's Nursing Shortage. He serves as a member of the Health, Public Safety, Business and Professions, Insurance, and Natural Resources Committees. Most recently, Assemblyman Koretz introduced amendments to H.R. 39 calling for state-initiated impeachment against George Bush and Dick Cheney.